Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, September 18th, 2018. This is the regular September monthly meeting of the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee. We have a quorum present. Five members are in attendance, and two are absent, Bart Beckman and Dave Baton. So we have a quorum. I'll call this meeting to order, and we will rise for the pledge, please. Thank you. Do we have any committee member announcements? I'll start with John Irwin on the right.
Nope.
Okay. Then I will open it up for public comment. Seeing none, we will close public comment and move on with the consent calendar. And item A1 on the consent calendar is the approval of minutes for last month's meeting, August 21st, 2018. Are there any updates, or do we have a motion to approve?
I'll move to approve.
Thank you, John.
I'll second.
Walter has second. John Martin motioning, Walter Heath seconding. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Thank you.
I do have one question, not really about the minutes, but about minutes in general, for Jennifer. Jennifer, I noticed that on the city's website, the most recent published minutes for the committee is from October of 2017. And I don't know if you were aware of that, so I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
No, I didn't know that. Maybe okay. That's something I'm supposed to be uploading. So we'll find out who's supposed to do that and get them uploaded.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Jen. All right, that brings us to the business items. Item B1 is a brief finance update from our financial director, Jen Cowie. Go ahead, Jen.
Okay, this one's going to be quite brief. We're still in the process of doing our year-end close. The auditors are coming mid-October, followed by the independent auditor that does the wastewater treatment plant audit. So that is, you know, a primary job of Sandy right now, and we're all kind of feeding in and helping and support in those year-end journal entries. The purchasing module is now being used by fire, the departments at City Hall, so finance, HR, and the clerk's office, as well as the city manager's department, and then portions of public works. We haven't deployed it out to all the work groups there yet, but portions of them, facilities, for example, is one that is using it quite regularly, and transit and trolley is going to start as well. It's working really well. It's really nice to have the contracts uploaded to and attached to the POs. We have council staff reports if we need to have something outside of budget for authority. Lori Kutzma's attaching all of the insurance documentation in our system, and then it goes through finance to make sure business license is obtained. So it's working really well so far, and hopefully we'll get some more departments going on using it and more work groups, so that by the end of the calendar year, we have everybody pretty functional on using it. And I think that's it.
So I have a question. First of all, that's a very notable accomplishment, because we've been talking about that for months, or maybe even over a year, perhaps. And I know a lot of us maybe erroneously think that just because you have a software implementation module, you can push a button and it works, and without realizing all the implementation details and the training, et cetera. So that's you and your staff are to be commended on that accomplishment. And I also noticed it was in the city manager's biweekly update, which is good. So we'll get the information to everybody. So thanks for that. Any other comments or anything? Anybody?
I think that's a great step forward. It's going to really help your internal controls and also year-end stuff, because you'll have those open POs that you'll be able to question whether or not invoices have been received against them, and so you won't have that issue that you had the year before.
We were just talking about that internally, and you know, still even this year for 17-18 closing out, we feel like we're chasing a cat a little bit and trying to know what was, you know, carry forward or still outstanding, and to be able to draw a PO, outstanding PO list, and go through and, you know, ask specifically, is this closed or not, will be so helpful.
Great, thank you. So that concludes the finance update. Let's move on to item B2, please, which is the fourth quarter investment report for the period ending June 30th. So that would be for the last fiscal year, 2017 to 2018. And that's on probably about the fifth page of your agenda packet. Jen, anything to comment on that?
So this one, you received the third quarter report a few months ago, and at that point we talked about not keeping as high of a balance in the sweep account, given the low interest rate in that, because that just happened prior to the close of June 30th. You don't see any change on inactivity in this report. I also wanted to note, if you see the LAIF interest rate, about 1.9%, I think if you look it up today, it's just slightly over 2% or closer to 2%. Why that's interesting to note is that our SRF planning loan for the Wharf project is about 1.7% interest. So we have not drawn down on that yet. We were waiting until the 218 process was finished to see where we're going. But given that that is finished now, it's essentially free money for us to use the SRF planning loan at a 1.7% interest rate and keep cash in our LAIF account at, you know, at 2%. So we're going to be working on, I wasn't here when we applied for that, I'm going to be working with our contact at SRF and how we go about submitting reimbursements. I think it's a reimbursement loan, you know, and start drawing that down. We're going to check into it. Does automatically roll over, I think, into other SRF funds if we get that. We're going to see if we can maybe not do that or if there's a requirement to keep that lower interest rate. But I did want to point that out because that's the kind of the first time LAIF has been back up to, you know, a reasonable interest rate or what seems like a reasonable interest rate, and especially higher than that loan interest rate.
Thank you. Any, start with Dawn, any comments, questions? John.
Yeah, I had a question. So at 1.9%, 250,000 brings in about $13 a day. What does your staff, what's it cost in order to monitor the certificates of deposits and things like that and transfer into the LIFE, or was it local agency investment fund?
I will confess that I don't think I've really spent enough time doing that. I need to go shopping for CDs. I think I said that last time. And it hasn't been something we've spent a lot of time. Val does the monthly bank reconciliations, and you know, from her end, she's, you know, validating the amounts and the interest on there. And then we generate these kind of reports for you. The other thing that was kind of hindering me spending a lot of time on it was, originally, we planned to fund the Wharf with cash on hand to reduce the overall debt service. The fact that the interest rate is lower than we could earn kind of changes that. So we were keeping a little bit more liquidity in there than normal. We also knew we had the big fire engine purchase coming up of $600,000+. So that liquidity rate that we have of 65% to 70%, was kind of not purposely adhering to that. So we also prepaid our unfunded liability, which was $1.2 million up front, to save $50,000 in interest. So we had some larger purchases in July, or you know, distribution of cash in July are coming up that, even though I'm confessing I didn't actively go out, I had a little bit of a reason behind doing that, and that I knew we had some of these anomalies. We do need to. We've had CDs mature. We need to go CD shopping. I've had several conversations with various brokers about doing that and signing up with them. Susan had used a couple pretty consistently during her tenure here. And then when Andrew Hamilton was interim, he switched to Zion Bank. And so we were kind of tracking down the paperwork for that and understanding why he switched. It's a little uncommon, I think, for an interim director to make that kind of change. So I was trying to understand a little bit more about that. And I've had conversations with one of the brokers Susan used, and then another broker that I have some familiarity with, but I've never used them, and trying to decide which route we're going to go. I think Zion's being used more as the custodial than anything else at this point, not actually purchasing through them. But it's time now that we spend more time. It shouldn't be a large investment of time because we have such a passive portfolio. Monitoring balances, and you know, it was a great point that we shouldn't have $5 million in our sweep account when it's such a low interest rate. And I think now we've completed some major parts of various processes in the last few months, so we'll have some more time to dedicate to that.
Okay. Yeah, I just kind of took a look. So at $250,000 at 1.9%, that works about $13 a day. So it's, what is it, maybe a week? You let something drift and it's not going to affect us too much. And about what do we need to keep available, or do you keep a prediction of how much we need from month to month, or do you take an average between month to month?
In March, we came back with a kind of a recommended liquidity rate, and that was 65% to 70%. We did that based on, I did a survey through CSMFO, which is California Society of Municipal Finance Officers. You can survey, they have 2,000 members, it's like 300 different agencies. I think we only got like 3 responses. It was a fairly small number. It was based on kind of rolling monthly operating expenditures, and you take an average. We kind of used that philosophy when we developed that, and the 65 to 70% seemed about right and in line with what we need. But you'll see that, you know, at the bottom of the page 6, it says our liquidity holdings are almost 89%, so significantly above that. But again, that was partially due to some of those anomalies that I knew we were going to have coming forward.
How long does it take to get money out of money market?
If you do it by 2 o'clock.
Okay, so it's 1 day. All right. So money market, it's, you know, put as much as we can. And, okay. And then just looking through it, it looks like we have like 4 CDs coming up in the next month. Is that right? So we have about $1 million we'll be putting in places.
Yeah, that's correct. And that's why it makes it more urgent for me to go CD shopping.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead, John.
Okay. So in your report, Jennifer, you compare the city's yield to LAIF. Are you using LAIF as a benchmark?
Yes.
So just realistically, how close to LAIF do you think the city can get? Do you think you'll achieve parity, or is that possible, or are you always going to be a little bit below?
I think it's always going to be a little bit below, but I could be wrong on that.
Okay.
I mean, you try to get it as close as possible, or at least, you know, if it's significantly different, keep more money in LAIF.
Okay. Because, I mean, just so keep in mind that before you were here, we didn't get these reports, okay? So it's only because you've been doing your job that we're actually able to ask these questions. But the first one we got was for the September 30th of 17 quarter. And the spread between LAIF and what the city earned was 17 basis points. And that's been getting bigger and bigger and bigger until this report, it's 57 basis points. So we're kind of going in the wrong direction. And I think your plan to keep less money in those two rival bank accounts will probably help to kind of close the gap there. But just wanted to point that out.
I think and maybe we can revisit that when we come back with our first quarter of 18-19, because I know when we did the third quarter and I was looking at, you know, the certificates and the short-term rates, they were significantly higher, and so we had planned to stick with short-term, you know, 1 to 2 years at most. And if, you know, that's still holding, then we'd probably reach above LAIF if we are very strategic in taking money out of the market, money market or the sweep accounts, and keeping more in the CDs on a short-term basis. We probably have, you know, sufficient money in LAIF to cover, and especially if we're pulling on that SRF loan.
Okay, because in addition to those accounts with Rapid Bank that are on this report, on the quarterly cash report, you've got $494,000 in the Rabobank checking account, basically. So that's your daily account.
Yeah, that's correct. I don't know the exact dollar amount, but
yeah, but that's okay. That's over and above what's on your investment report, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So I mean, that's money that just you have to have earning no interest because you have to have it in the bank
cash
for
money.
Your payrolls and everything. Sure. You know, one of the things that I'm kind of missing on this report that I looked at the investment policy, and the investment policy doesn't require it, but for me as a reader of this report, it would help me to see how many dollars were actually earned during the quarter.
Okay.
And I mean, it doesn't actually require it in the investment policy, but it's useful information for me.
I think we can add that without a problem.
Is that something you could eventually get out of OpenGov?
You will be able to, because okay. We don't distribute interest until year end, so.
Oh, okay, yeah. Makes sense.
But interest actually gets posted to these accounts, though.
Right, so you'd be able to draw a number on a month-to-month. It wouldn't get distributed to the funds it's going to end up in, but if you're just looking for a dollar number.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay, thanks. No, actually, my questions were the same. A plan for the four that are expiring, and then the other obvious thing was the Opus Bank at 1.93 versus the Rabobank sweep at 0.05. So, you know, if nothing else gets done, you just focus on the, you know, 80-20 rule. But okay, thank you. Oh, go ahead, John.
I'm sorry, there was one other question. I noticed on the monthly cash report that the CD for Pentagon Federal Credit Union is, let's see, it says it's held in trust for Morro Bay Garbage. How does that work?
I'm gonna get back to you on that.
Okay.
I did have a conversation with Susan about it right when I first started because I had no idea what that was, and I'm not remembering all the details to that, so I will get back to you on that.
Okay, thank you. And for everybody's reference, Susan is the former finance director, so since she's no longer here, sometimes it's hard to, you know, get that info.
Correct.
Easily.
And Committee Member Martin's, I think, referring to the cash reports that are online on our website under the monthly reporting section. So if that's helpful, we can include those with this report as well if the committee would like to see those. We generate them once the bank is reconciled, once the bank accounts mm-hmm. are reconciled.
Just when you do these, I would say maybe, if it's not too much extra work.
Nope.
All right, thanks, Jen. Anything else? Okay.
No, thanks.
We should, at some point, we will go through that investment policy again. We did go through it a couple years. I know we've had some comments on it, so that might be another thing on the to-do list, but it's pretty straightforward, I think.
At the last council meeting, or the council meeting on mm-hmm. the 28th, we outlined a schedule of bringing forward accounting policies and procedures. The investment policy is investments as a whole. It's not just mm-hmm. specific to the investment policy, but that is scheduled for March 26th at the council meeting. So we'll be bringing forward a series of debt, investment, and grant policies for the council to consider. And we'd probably include any changes to this investment policy at that point too. We could bring that, at least the investment piece, to this committee in February if they'd like.
That'd be good. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Okay, that will bring us to item B3. That's the report on the fiscal emergency plan economic triggers. And you may want to make some comments. That's in everybody's agenda pack, so you can look at that and see what that. I just saw the three, I think it was three triggers there. But if you want to start us off with some summary information, Jennifer. Or?
Sure. This was kind of came about two ways. One, it's a council goal and objective that's outlined in the staff report regarding financial and economic sustainability. And then more recently, the council requested that a fiscal emergency plan be agendized for discussion. So in thinking through the council goal and that concept of a fiscal emergency plan, I kind of like to think of them as a fiscal resiliency plan with two different chapters. The first chapter being kind of a short-term, you know, true emergency plan, and it being a very transparent plan, and that's why we're engaging our employees, that these would be triggers that would stimulate action under their plan, or at least discussion under the plan. And then the second piece being a much more thorough and in-depth piece of being the fiscal sustainability plan, and that's where we would look at, you know, new revenues, expenditure, change of service model options, those kind of things, and have extensive community engagement and discussion about that. This was part of that same packet or staff report that was agendized on the 28th of August. Included in that, we gave two examples of fiscal sustainability plans, so if you're interested in seeing those, they're available online and attached to item C3 on the August 28th agenda, and you'll see they are quite comprehensive and extensive. Also, keeping in mind that there will be a new council starting in December, January, we wanted to break this into doable parts and achievable parts, so the fiscal emergency plan being less of a, not as comprehensive of a document, seemed sustainable and doable for the rest of this council, sitting council, and then in January we'll begin work on a longer term sustainability plan. So the item B3 that you have is the economic triggers that would stimulate, you know, fiscal first aid is needed because of some emergency. And we met with the employee group, our budget advisory group. There's, I don't know, forget how many I said, but 12, 14 city staff on that committee, pretty much representing all departments in most of the work groups. There's a couple work groups within departments that didn't bring anybody forward to participate, but they were all offered the opportunity to. We are trying to create a very transparent, this is, the employees will know that this happens, so whatever that mitigation measure is, there'll be a conversation about it. So we identified, I think, five economic triggers. A natural disaster, we want to keep that kind of vague in that it could be an earthquake, it could be a fire, it could be a tsunami, any kind of, you know, declared natural disaster that would have, you know, significant economic impacts or significant financial impacts to the city. Human-caused disaster, if there's, you know, something outside of a natural disaster, but also could trigger fiscal emergency or the need to kind of cut back on expenditures. State takeaways of local revenues. You know, the best example of that would have been the redevelopment dissolution. That didn't affect Morro Bay, but that had significant impacts for any city having a redevelopment agency across the state. You know, if the gas tax is repealed, that could have impacts, so something like that. Large unexpected costs, this is trying to get to the PERS issue. It's not unexpected anymore, but when they first made that, their changes to their discount rate and their policies, you know, that would have triggered some kind of response, or should have triggered some kind of response, at least in, you know, future planning and preparing for that. And then last but not least is the revenue shortfalls. This is still a little vague. In here, we're wanting to see if we have concurrence or if there's any other triggers that we'd recommend. But if there's an economic downturn that we have two consecutive quarters of declining revenues, we'd want to start having a conversation about what to do with that. For purposes of this, we identified the revenues that are outlined in the MOUs, the Memorandum of Understandings, with our labor groups. They have COLAs in those that are triggered by revenues, so it seems reasonable that any economic downturn or any kind of fiscal response would be tied to those same triggers or the same revenues, and those are the major ones. Sales tax, TOT, and property tax are primary revenue sources. If we get agreement from this committee and the council to move forward with these triggers, we do some analysis. We know property tax doesn't come in consistently quarter over quarter, so we'd have to have some kind of target ranges of what we think those percentages are, so we know if we're falling behind or not. And we would define those in kind of the final draft plan that's brought forward to the council. But for this conversation, we'd like feedback from the committee. If you think these five are appropriate, if you think there's something we've missed or kind of overlooking, if you want to make other suggestions, or if you have any questions or comments in general to share with the council on the emergency, fiscal emergency plan or fiscal resiliency plan, I'm happy to include that in the council staff report. They'll be discussing these on Tuesday, the 25th, so you're welcome to come to that as well.
So thank you. And I guess I have just one introductory comment. I did go over the two examples you had posted for the city council meeting, and they were quite extensive, hundreds of pages, literally. So if anybody's interested in those. But I thought it was interesting that one of the cities, you know, had a professional consultant and facilitator, and they spent over a year at this, and they detailed all their meetings. And so it's no trivial task. And I think Morro Bay is in the right direction, trying to at least get on paper some high-level summary. And maybe there's more triggers, maybe there's less, but we've got to start somewhere, and I don't think there's anything in the budget to, you know, embark on this, you know, one-year consulting type project to do a real extensive job, and nor do I think that's really necessary here. We have done some extensive management reporting in the past, so with our budget reporting, but anyways, I'll open it up for discussion for you all. So what you're looking for us is the five triggers, and do we think those are the right ones? And then I think you're going to do further analysis, your staff and employee group. You know, for us to throw out percentages of that without seeing the numbers wouldn't make any sense, I don't think.
Yeah, if you could give feedback on the five that are proposed, if there's any others that we've mm-hmm. missed. And then the next phase, this will go to council on Tuesday, and then we're scheduled to go. I think I outlined the schedule in the staff report. The next topic of discussion would be what are those mitigation strategies? Mm-hmm. And then when we come back with a draft plan, it will include the analysis of what their percentages are mm-hmm. in terms okay. of revenues and that kind of thing.
Okay, so I have some other comments, but I want some other folks to talk. So, John, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, got a few things popped up. You know, when I was going through those things and what you finally there, I guess this would normally follow under large unexpected costs, but in my mind, there could be, based on what our maintenance process is right now, a catastrophic failure of something, like the nutmeg tank could rupture and we have to do something, or one of the storm drains underneath Highway 1 collapses and we have a pothole or a, you know, sinkhole formed somewhere. I'm not sure how you would deal with that. You might want to talk to Rob, but we're talking probably in the neighborhood of about $2 million just to think about that stuff. The other thing which I would be tempted to do is if a windfall comes and you've got, say, an extra $500,000 because of a law changes at the state, do we have a plan on how to allocate that funds?
So I'm hoping that's a problem we have.
Give
me that problem, please.
Well, but then you have to spend it, and then you have to allocate it, and it, you know, I made, you know, when I was working for the federal government, what I did was when someone didn't spend their money and an installation had some additional funds, I said, okay, these are on your wish list or your priority list, and we just, it took us maybe a day and a half to put those things forward, so, you know, the money disappears and it falls into the budget. So it you know, shouldn't be hard for it shouldn't be hard for your department heads to say, okay, if some extra money came up, what would you want to spend it on? So you just have it. It's just a list with an estimate, and usually for us it was like we have a contract price negotiated and it just flips over into it. And then the other thing I was curious about was Measure Q has some limitations on what you can spend the funds on. There are, so that would have to be something which you'd be aware of in your emergency planning. And the other one that pops up is my son was saying Caltrans says that SB 1, if it survives November, how much money would the city see if in SB 1 funds if that became available? Or does anyone have an idea?
Oh, they've already projected that, right? Was it like 250,000, something like that?
I think our 18-19 amount is 191.
Oh, okay.
It's right around 200,000, but it's, yeah, you know, projected to go up each year, and I don't know off the top of my head what 19-20 forecasts were.
And that's allocated for the pavement management?
Mm-hmm, it is.
All right, so those were the things which popped up in my head is, you know, just have a little list of stuff where something becomes available and you know you want it, you just say, here it is.
I think that's a good point to include. Part of the August 28th council discussion, like I mentioned, included policies and this fiscal emergency or fiscal resiliency plan as one staff report, because they really do go hand in hand. And on Tuesday, the policy piece for the council is general emergency reserves. So we have a general fund emergency reserve policy that was adopted by resolution back in 2015. Recently, we did a sewer and water reserve policy. When we applied for WIFIA, we wanted to include that with that. And what we've prepared for council is a updated general fund emergency reserve policy, internal service fund reserve policies, and then we have draft harbor. The Harbor Enterprise Fund does not have a reserve policy at this point, so we have a harbor policy and one for the TBID fund. But a part of the updated general fund emergency reserve policy, and should council choose to adopt it, outlines that if there's excess revenues over expenditures at year end, kind of the order of what's done with that money. And to have a kind of unfunded needs list would be a nice addition for them to draw to. You know, I think the first recommendation is it goes to any shortfalls in the internal services funds, because we've identified what minimum and target funding levels should be for, like, our facilities fund, our equipment replacement fund. And if those are not at the minimum or minimum levels, we recommend funding those. Secondly, maybe going to a CalPERS pay down fund or something like that, and then an unassigned reserve fund, but to have some kind of needs list that the council could pick from if there's money left for that would be helpful. So I think we can include that.
Yeah, and you need to be aware of any restrictions on the funds.
Absolutely. They would all have to be legally compliant.
Okay. John?
So Jennifer, just starting with the first page of your report, you've got the three actions there, and we're really only talking with about action A, correct? I mean, what's going to be happening between now and the end of the year is just action A?
Correct, the plan.
Okay.
I think so, B is a little bit in line with that too, though.
I was going to ask, what is action B? That sounds like it's something that is going to be just for management to know. Is that the idea? Like a secret little plan that the city manager has just in the worst case?
No. Well, so this goal was reaffirmed by the council. So it was adopted prior to both the city manager and myself joining. So, you know, not the intent behind what they are, I think I'll speak for the city manager. He's not intending anything to be a secret plan. So I actually think this component is action A and B, and they want it to be a very transparent, open.
Okay, so that term staff internal is not to be taken seriously?
Well, staff is being involved in the process, but it's not just staff internal, so maybe that should have been revised to be just an emergency plan that would encompass both internal staff and the community and council.
Okay. You mentioned that the MOUs have triggers that pertain to the revenues, and can you provide those to us at the next meeting? So we can, I would imagine they'd have to be a little more precise than what is shown here in item 5.
So they were on the agenda, but that's in negotiation, right? So you could actually go to the agenda item and read them.
They are in the MOUs that are available on our website. I'll just send you the link so the whole committee has them and you can look them up. They are very prescriptive. They are tied to budgeted revenue amounts for property tax, sales tax, and TOT. And then there's parameters. So if we don't meet the exact amount, but we're within $100,000 instead of a 2%, it's a 1%. I might be a little off on those numbers, yeah. But that's kind of how it's working.
Okay, and does that trigger for all of those revenues combined, or is it looking at individual property tax, sales tax?
The ultimate DOT trigger is on the total, but it lists individual specific amounts. So you may not meet the trigger for property tax, but maybe our TOT is quite high, and the total at the bottom line is mm-hmm. ultimately what triggers.
So it really is a combination of mm-hmm. the three.
Yes.
That is the trigger. And would you be looking at a similar type of thing for this? I mean, in my mind, a trigger is something that has to have some dollar amounts or something that would be black and white to...
So one of the challenges with having this as a trigger, and I think you have to have it as a trigger, you have to have some kind of, you know, revenue generated trigger, I think, for it to make sense. TOT, for example, you have your off season and you have, you know, your busy season. So we can't just say, you know, X percent. It's, you know, it's not 2/12 or, you know, 1/6 of whatever the number is. And that's where we have to do that analysis, where if it falls in this period, if the, you know, winter months, for example,
sure.
TOT is going to trend, and we have to include that, you're right, for it to have any kind of meaning. Sales tax, you know, cyclical too, but more steady than right. TOT. And then property tax really comes in twice a year. So what are we looking at in terms of the period for that?
So really... what you need to look at, because of the seasonal variations, what you need to look at is either the same quarter for the previous year. You're talking about two consecutive quarters of declining revenues, but that might just be a seasonal issue that causes that to happen. And if you looked at the quarters and compared them to the previous year and saw a decrease, then that might be a more fair-minded approach. And of course, ultimately, I think the best way to determine it would be to compare it to budget, but without having the budget planned on a monthly or quarterly basis, then that's difficult to make that analysis.
Right. I think it would have to be tied to prior year actuals received versus where we're at.
Year to
actuals.
Date.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Except, of course, from one year to the next, those things kind of, they do change. You get revenues that come in unexpectedly, or you have changes in expenditures. Like this year, you spent a lot of cash to prepay that CalPERS, mm-hmm. and that wasn't done last year. So when you compare 18-19 to 17-18, the expenditures are going to look a lot different for July.
Well,
because of that.
And that's
cash
why
outlay.
We were specific with this to just be revenues.
Okay.
So it wouldn't capture those kind of decisions that we make internally. It would be truly based on what's coming into the city.
Okay. And then on the other four triggers, they do seem pretty nebulous. I mean, a natural disaster, there's a wide spectrum of things that could be considered natural disaster, and some of them I could see triggering some activity by the city, but others not so much. And in fact, some natural disasters you end up being money ahead when it's all over.
That's true. And the conversation in the employee budget group was, how much do we want to define this? We started listing, you know, what is a natural disaster, but then didn't want to miss something and it not fall in there. Kind of where we ended it, and what I think we were envisioning for the final project, was to have some kind of value tied to that. And what that value is, I'm not sure, and I'm open to any suggestions, but you know, if it's something that's a $50,000 hit, that's probably not going to trigger a response under this. If it's $2 million, it absolutely what a should in my mind.
Right.
And what is that right range? You know, that I don't know that I have a great answer for that, but we do need to define it in some way, less on what the disaster is and more on what the financial impact is.
Right. I mean, if you're leaving it to the discretion of the city manager, I suppose that's okay, but if you're talking about very difficult decisions like reductions in force or something like that, then you want to have something that's more black and white.
We don't want to be prescriptive with this. We want to identify what triggers a conversation about various mitigation measures that have been outlined. So we don't want it to say there's been a natural disaster, people are getting laid off. You know, there's been a natural disaster, we've outlined 7 different possible mitigation measures. The city manager goes to those and would make a recommendation as to what makes sense in the situation for it to go to council. But the concept of being very transparent that this happened, we know this triggers something, and it's one of these 7 things that were outlined or whatever, you know, number ends up being.
Okay. And how does this effort compare or integrate or follow on to the work that was done by, I think it was several years ago, the Management Partners financial forecast that was done? It was more of a long-term look, and that's where the general fund emergency reserve was established.
Yeah, in my mind, that really feeds more into the economic sustainability or fiscal sustainability component of it. I view this piece as being truly a very short-term. So while it might have long-term consequences that will feed into the sustainability piece of the plan and the work that Management Partners did, we always need to be looking forward on a long-term basis to make sure we are sustainable. This is something, if there's an economic downturn and we see revenues coming in, we want to have some immediate response to that while we determine what the long-term impact is, right? So the immediate response is likely not layoffs. That's a long-term response. The short-term emergency response might be a hiring freeze, or you know, you can't hire without city manager approval. Maybe that's the short-term measure until we figure out what that long-term appropriate reaction is. So these need to be something very we can be nimble, quick with, and very responsive with while we evaluate if there's long-term impacts and how that feeds into the forecast and the work that Management Partners did and what we ultimately end up with our sustainability plan.
Okay, and that's coming down the road.
That's we'll start that piece in January should we hold true to the schedule that we've outlined, which is pretty ambitious. So
yeah, it is ambitious for sure. You know, one thing I would like to see, Jennifer, and I don't know if this would be a tremendous amount of work, but the Management Partners forecast for the general fund reserves, it had very specific numbers and percentages and such. And I've never seen a report card, you know, that, hey, here's what the forecast was, here's where we ended up. Is there any way you could prepare that for the committee?
I can go through and we can give you kind of the balances in the GFIR account compared to what was recommended for the various years. As I mentioned, we have provided or are providing the council with a new proposed general fund emergency reserve, one that aligns with kind of how we're doing the other, recommending the other reserves be established and more streamlined. So less of, there's a minimum target, minimum level and a target level, but it's not by year in what we've proposed at this point. Then the one that was adopted by resolution goes specifically year by year, and it's this number, this number, this number. So we wanted to, we're proposing to simplify it. But if it's helpful to have that back information, and council may not approve or adopt it, the new one in either. So depending on what happens with them, we could bring that back.
Well, it's always helpful to me when you have plans, when you have plans that forecast things out many, many years, it's always good to look at what the real results were to see where you may have missed so you can improve in future years.
In
future
all of efforts. In all of the policies that we're proposing, there is a statement in each of them that the funding levels were reported back both at the mid-year update, because at that point we'll have closed the year out, the prior year out, and have true numbers, and then also with the budget adoption process where we would point to what is the minimum level that's approved for funding, what is the target, where do we fall, and do we need to make adjustments? And then it calls for under 3 year, for under the minimum target funding level, then there's a we have to come back with a plan that within 3 years gets us to that funding level. So those are in all the proposed draft policies that we're putting forward to the council for the different reserves. And that's a little bit different than the current GFER policy.
And the current one is cumbersome, for sure. But, I mean, have like when you are supposed to calculate the actual operating revenues for the past three fiscal years and then make the calculation for the reserves based on that, has that ever actually been done?
We did do it this year for budget. And I think we even incorporated a footnote. It wasn't clear or really spelled out that well, if I remember, and I think it was your recommendation, and we included it somewhere in the in the adopted budget. And I don't know if it was done in prior years. I don't recall ever seeing it anywhere.
Okay. Thank you.
I just have a couple comments. I'll make them now because they relate to what my colleagues have said. But I agree on the number four, the large unexpected costs, maybe a little more something, either examples there or something that says like non-routine type things. The other thing is, you're right, when you give the like 5A, two consecutive quarters, I wasn't clear just reading that wording whether it meant in one of those categories or all of those or maybe it's two out of three, like taking into consideration the comments John Martin just made. But I was very happy to see they were in the MOU, regardless of what gets finally negotiated. I think with our labor costs in the general fund being about, 72-73%, always almost three-fourths, that is the area we're going to have to tack one way or the other. So, and I agree with you on a lot of these things like natural disaster or whatever the triggers are. You don't know the exact, you can't predict the exact, all the components of that. So that's why it's good to have a selection of items for consideration so there's no surprise. But that doesn't mean one specific thing happens immediately, the effect will be this or the result will be that. So I think that's very good. That's probably about all I have right now on that. So, Walter?
Yeah, I have nothing to add really other than to say it seems like a great basic structure. It's going to allow you some flexibility within which to work. It looks fine. Things rarely happen exactly as we plan when it comes to these emergencies, but I think that's allowing you to at least, you know, recognize, you know, when you see an emergency, we've got it and we have a plan in place. So it's a good starting point for a discussion at a time when trying to, you know, recreate that from scratch could be very, very difficult. So I you know, commend you for being so foresighted on that.
Go ahead, Don.
Well, thank you. And I looked at those examples too, and I'm glad that the department is looking at what other cities are doing for models that could be successful. I know this isn't a rainy day fund, but I heard somebody, I was talking to somebody about it, and they said, oh, a rainy day fund. So I was just wondering if you could clarify, where does a rainy day fund fall within this context? I'm pretty sure that's what you mean by emergency reserve policies, but just in layperson's terms.
So cities have all different kinds of reserve policies. They're called all different names. They're for different purposes. This is the General Fund Emergency Reserve is a unassigned, unrestricted fund balance reserve, meaning that it's general fund excess revenues over expenditures that have accumulated in a fund and can be drawn down in the case of fiscal need. The council can define what is fiscal need. It is a GFOA best practice and recommendation, just like with our own personal savings account. You know, we have something set aside in case there's an emergency. You lose your job, you have a health crisis, you have a pot of money that, you know, maybe you don't spend on vacations, is there in case you have a true need. And that's really what the General Fund Emergency Reserve is for. Some of the work that management partners did, and I think reading the current GFER policy, I think the intent was that they knew there was going to be an economic recession at some point. We wanted to be able to address some of the CalPERS issues that were happening back then and the impacts that they were going to have, and it was going to set aside to address those, and realizing that we were going to have deficit budgets at some point in the future, and saying it's okay to do that for a few years, we're going to use these emergency reserves. But other cities create multiple ones. They have a catastrophic emergency reserve, a fiscal stabilization emergency reserve. You know, the list is endless, really, and you can create them for just about anything and define what they're used for. I wouldn't view this one so much as a rainy day fund, but as that, you know, major health issue kind of fund that you need to have some money set aside for. We don't have as many reserve funds as other cities have, but we're not as large as many other cities either. So that's not that it's a bad thing. We're better off than some cities that have nothing. So I think we're in a good place, but we do want to make sure we have some metrics as to how we're coming up with the funding level for those reserves, what makes sense for a city of our size, and the needs that we have, and that it's reasonable and, you know, everybody knows what it's there for.
And on that menu of choices, would like use of emergency reserves be part of the menu of choices of things that could happen if one of these triggers was in play?
We haven't defined those yet, and that'll come back in October, and you'll see what the we kind of come up with. My thought would be yes. I would be surprised if that didn't include that, but I also would expect it would include it within some parameters, again, like not above X amount, because we're really looking again at that short-term measure. But I'm kind of just saying that off the top of my head. I haven't put a lot of thought into those at this point, and we certainly haven't discussed them with the employees or the city manager yet.
And then on the COLA increase MOUs, is that just labor, or does that include management, like director and city manager?
The specific triggers are in the MOUs for SEIU, fire, and police. The confidential and management groups are generally, and directors are generally tied to those by resolution. So when they come back, the MOUs come back, or the COLAs go into effect, when we update the salary schedule, which we have to do at council by resolution, they typically tie those other three, the director group, management, and confidential, to the MOUs.
And I would be a proponent, if it doesn't tie you down too much, to add written examples. Your verbal examples were super helpful for me to imagine what this could look like, but it resonates to me that you don't want to be too tied into an if-then scenario. And then also your example that this is a plan that really says the conversation will be started. I think that would be helpful, you know, in the narrative or whatever body that you have there, so that the public really understands and employees understand it's not about, like, if there's this emergency, then your job is cut, but that this is the conversation that gets started when these things happen.
I think we can add some language that says, you know, including but not limited to, to give some examples. I think with respect to the large unexpected costs, we can maybe add some language about catastrophic infrastructure failures or something along that line to capture Mr. Irwin's scenarios of the Nutmeg tank or some other kind of infrastructure failure. And then in terms of the language, I didn't add this in the schedule, and I should have, but the final proposed plan that will have all these pieces brought together is scheduled to go to the council in December. So in November, for our committee meeting, I should bring back a draft of what that plan looks like. It will probably be fairly rough, given the timing of the meeting and when the council's going to meet, but at least you'll have a kind of a framework for some of that language and what will be included in there.
And you, I don't know, you may want to say may include but not be limited to, as opposed to including but not limited to, if you're trying to keep it broad.
Okay.
that was it for me.
Thanks, Don. Go ahead. Anything else, John?
Yeah. Listening to John Martin, a couple things popped in my head. This is more or less under a what-if situation there. I remember back to when the State Water Project restrictions on what we were supposed to collect on water, you know, our water, you know, water charges. Where would that have fallen under this emergency planning? Would that have been under state takeaway, or would that have been unexpected? Or
I mean, I think it could have fallen under either one of those, really. I think you could have pointed to that and said that the uniqueness and what we need to be, and it goes back to your, you know, making sure the money can be used for that, is we're talking about enterprise funds in those situations. So the relief in that case would have to come, wouldn't have to, would likely come from an enterprise fund, and the general fund wouldn't subsidize that, most likely. So we do need to have some language in there that clarifies the legal use of the money.
Okay, and then the other issue which popped in my head, so we have MOUs with our employee negotiating groups. We have an MOU with the State Water Projects. Are there any other MOUs which put restrictions on funds which we're supposed to collect? Or
By MOU, I don't know, but there's restrictions on a variety of the funds we get. So just by nature of being enterprise funds, water, sewer, and harbor have restrictions. Our gas tax money has restrictions. CDBG funds that come in have restrictions. And so that we would have to include language about legal uses of the funds, and however we phrase that, okay. We'll have to make sure we include that.
And so after the State Water Project got done with it, did we do a review of other legally required expenditures of funds or collection of funds, or are we something which we'll have to do at some point?
I haven't done that, and I haven't seen it since I haven't seen anything on that since I've started, but I can't say that it wasn't done either. I haven't been looking for it.
All right. Okay. That's all I got.
Well, just listening to the conversation, I something came to mind. The subject of this is receive report regarding fiscal emergency plan economic triggers. So an emergency plan, you think about an emergency plan, you think about something that has to be addressed in a fairly short time frame. And when the description is that a trigger will now make the city begin to have a conversation, that doesn't really sound like an emergency. And the reason I'm concerned about this is because there's a little appreciated part of the California Constitution under Prop 218, which says that for a city or any municipality in California to put forward a special tax measure or a general tax measure, it has to be done with the same election where those council members are on the ballot, except in a declared emergency. And I've seen cities use that exception very, very loosely. And I just hope that that is not going to be the result of this effort.
That's not my intent with this effort. I don't think it's anybody else's intent with this effort. And if we need to clarify that in the preamble, if you will, of what this plan is, this isn't intended to be a mechanism for the city manager to come forward and recommend a fiscal emergency in order to generate any kind of sales tax. It's a balance between not wanting to be overly prescriptive and saying X happened, so you shall do this, and at least setting up a framework where this happened, so we need to do one of these. And it needs to be able, we need to be able to respond quickly. If there's a natural disaster, we're not going to probably have a special council meeting to decide what to do. And so there will likely need to be language. And again, having not written this, you know, I'm going off the top of my head at this point, but there likely needs to have language where there's some authority for the city manager to act within. If there is a natural disaster, he can kind of go through those agreed upon mitigation measures if he needs to be super nimble and responsive. However, the preference would be at the next foreseeable option to have a council discussion about that. I think that would be fair in terms of how we could phrase this and make it effective for us.
Well, I appreciate your response. Thank you.
You might, you know, wordsmith the word emergency to get untangled from this issue of, you know, there might be other things to call this plan that have the same weight without using the word emergency.
Okay, fair enough.
Good points. Go ahead, John.
The other thought then pops up, would issuing bonds in response to an emergency be a possibility?
That wouldn't, in my mind, be a short-term measure. That would be something in the long-term sustainability plan might outline when it would be appropriate to do that. The city also has a debt management policy that could speak to that. But that bond issuance for a short-term mitigation measure wouldn't qualify.
Okay, so it sounds like we are pretty much in agreement with the description here, and I see you've been taking copious notes on our comments. So do you have what you need from us in terms of, I think we're in agreement with all five triggers, but we have some comments and things, how you might, you know, enhance the definitions and report. Do you have what you need from us? Do you need a motion?
I know it sounds like there's consensus, so I'm okay with saying consensus in the staff report for the city council, unless okay. It looks like everybody's okay with that.
Yeah, okay.
You're welcome to make a motion if you want to formalize it more, but I'm happy to There isn't. It's not an action item, so there's no.
It's a receive and report,
right?
So we don't formally need a motion. I just want to make sure all five members are, you know, in agreement with it. You know, basically, I didn't hear anything conflicting that any of us said. So as long as you have our comments, that should be sufficient.
The council staff report will look pretty similar to this. Mm-hmm. So I will. What I'm hearing from the committee and what we'll add in there for your feedback is consensus on the five recommended triggers with some general definitions and descriptions to help define what those are in the final draft plan. A suggestion to reconsider or look at the naming of the plan or to clarify what the intent of the plan is going forward and how it will be used. And also, I guess included in that is when the plan would be, what does triggered mean in terms of a conversation or immediate response, and capturing the use of those legally restricted funds and how we characterize that in the plan and any mitigation measures.
And yeah, the final comment is, in those samples you provided, that's exactly how they did it, from what I recall, the mitigation measures and specifics. So, and those were quite comprehensive. So, okay, thanks for that. All right, so then that will bring us on to item B4, the fiscal year budget brief. That's a continuation of the discussion we had last time. So thank you, Jennifer. From what I could see, you had taken several of our suggestions. So
maybe I can just open a little bit with here. This is the balancing act between kind of keeping our character yet giving
right.
enough information. So
perfect.
We put a glossary of terms on the back. These may or may not be the right terms. So if there's something in here that you don't think needs to be in here, or there's something that you want to add to it, keeping in mind the limited space. We removed the council and the staff to the front cover, kind of added some of the reference pages in the blue banner at the bottom, the OpenGov and the Morro Bay CA.gov reference page, took out some of the graphs, but not all of them, to help try to balance that character versus data in here. So, and then made, I think, all of the other corrections in terms of making sure the transfers and transfers out were consistent, the general fund numbers matched in all the different counts, mm-hmm. and then the order of funding in terms of high to low. I think I captured that as well. So welcome any feedback.
No, I noticed all the numbers balanced and that. The only question I have is on the accumulation funds there on the last page, the sewer and water. So that were those fund balances the end of last fiscal year and then what you're projecting at the end of the next fiscal year, is that correct?
The 18-19 column is what was approved in the 18-19 adopted budget. At this point, I would say those numbers are very different, especially if we plan to draw down the SRF planning loan. And when we adopted the 18-19 budget, we didn't have a split between the water and sewer funds for the WARF project.
Right.
So that has changed these. But if this is truly a summary of the adopted budget, that's what those numbers were at the time of budget.
Okay, so then the $11 million for the end of the last, remember I had discussed that with you and we knew it was between 10 and 11. It looks like it's 11. 2, 5, or 3, maybe. Is that right for the sewer and water funds?
Again, that would have been what we estimated in adopting budget, so it was even prior to...
Oh, okay. It wasn't the year end. And at the bottom there, it says total expenditures. Is that the right word?
Total cash.
Okay. Thank you. And then the other comment I have, I know we asked for one of these charts to get a little bigger. That was the one on the last page, middle, dead center of the expenditures by department. And then I see where you have, I guess the only way you can make it bigger is if you take out the bar chart at the bottom. The bar chart's a little hard to read, but oh, that's just a suggestion. Yeah, right. Page 14, the middle, expenditures by department, and then we list them in category order, which is good. And then on the very bottom, we have a bar chart there. So I'll leave that up to you if we could substitute two charts with one chart, making one chart a little bigger. I don't know.
So even if I take that out, it can't go bigger because of the parameters of having a trifold. You can distort it and pull it down, but then the...
Yeah. Okay.
But maybe a different, maybe it's not a pie chart. Maybe it's a bar graph that goes a little bigger. Like a different kind of chart might be able to be enlarged.
Oh, like she's saying a vertical pie chart.
A vertical, yeah. Like a
would
vertical.
That look, I don't know. Can you guys read that?
It's kind of hard.
I can change the chart type or play with that.
Okay. That's the only thing. Your best judgment. I'm not. Any other comments, guys? Everybody likes it?
No,
I have a few.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Either one.
A couple things popped to mind. General government, is that what's included in those costs? Is that administration, things like that? It's under capital program budget, financial summary, and you've got
page 13.
Street improvements, and then general government. I was just wondering what was under general government.
Those would be anything funded essentially through like excess general fund reserves. So the fire engine purchase, there was I think some money coming for city park, the park equipment, some of it's with impact fees, and then others I think with general fund. The Surf Street stairs, for example, at one point they were talking about taking those down, and then that got removed, but that was going to be general fund. I can asterisk that and note that if that's helpful.
If you want. I was just curious what was included then. Next on your budget summary, where do Measure Q and SB1 gas tax come in on the funds? Which lines would cover those items?
Are you under the citywide data?
No, it says budget summary general fund.
Under general fund, Measure Q is not on there, nor is gas tax, because that's only general fund.
Okay.
They're special revenue
special
funds.
Fund.
And where would those show up then?
Under the citywide data column.
Okay. So that would be capital project funds?
Measure Q, I believe, is categorized as other revenue fund, and then gas tax is special.
Okay. And then contract services for city administration, you're not talking about contracting, which Public Works would do for WERF or the pavement management. You're just talking about the audit type things we do. And
correct. It's no. It doesn't even include the city attorney because that's listed separately as it's part of the administration program, but it's not considered a contract service in that category. That is the auditor, animal services, dispatch.
We have a lot of information in a small space. This is very good. Just a couple of things. I don't know if this is a typo, but on under the budget summary general fund, then you have three definitions at the bottom of the page. And under hotel tax, there's kind of a remnant of a phrase there, local property taxes.
Oh, I was squeezing. Thank you.
And then in the glossary, you've got a definition for inter-fund transfers, and then you also have a separate definition for transfers. I don't know if that's just redundant or...
Yeah, we don't need both of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was all I saw. That was really a good product.
A couple other typos while you're there. The first definition, balanced budget, I think you wanted to say the last phrase, but possibly with surplus. And then on capital project funds, funds that account, singular.
Okay.
Don't want anybody to be distracted from the otherwise exceptional. Walter, Dawn, anything?
I have a few. Do you have some?
Go ahead.
I would put, these are minor things, and thank you for doing this. I know how much time these take. I've done a lot of them, and so I have to hand it to you. I would put the websites in white on blue. I think they're kind of hard to see black on blue. To be honest, I don't know if this is a typo under enterprise fund where it says self-supporting activates of governmental units.
Activities.
I don't know if that should be activities. Yeah. And then under enterprise fund, there's actually a few different types, yes?
We have our water, harbor, and sewer. Our enterprise funds.
I would add those in there, and to buy you space under balanced budget, you could get rid of the word more and bring that definition to three lines instead of four. That might buy you some space to add the names water, harbor.
And we'll have some space by eliminating one of the, take out interfund transfers and just leave transfers.
And then under governmental funds, I might bold or do something with the names of those five different funds, just so it's, you know, a quick view. And I don't know if there's an extra space above licenses and permits because you're talking about taxes and then licenses and permits as being different. You may want to unify this spacing where it has hotel tax, then VLF backfill property tax, and licenses and permits.
Oh, okay.
And the bar chart, I will say it's hard for me to read with the size of the bar chart.
Do we want to take out that chart altogether and just have two, whether they're pie charts or some other easier to read?
I'll defer to the group. I'm a proponent of the more visual, the better. If you could take out all of these lists and just have them in pictures, I think people are going to pay attention more. But you know, it's not a hill I want to die on, but is the trifold, is this inside all of it a budget summary? Like, should budget summary move to the top, or is it just that column where budget summary is?
No, it could move to the top.
Then I might move that up, and that'll buy you some space in that column. And I love the glossary.
Good. If there's room for one more term, is there a particular term? I mean, we're going to have some space after taking out.
My personal preference would be to explain, so what is the water fund? What is the harbor fund?
Okay.
But I'll defer to the group. There might be something I'm not thinking of.
Is It's a tough one because you always want to balance, it's like a resume, the amount of white space and the pictures and that. If you put too many definitions in here, the reader will choose. They won't read them all. So that's, I don't know, I guess I just defer to you guys on that. I don't have any strong.
Okay. Between lists and graphics, I've done enough graphics to know I can make those lie very easily. I'd rather have a list of numbers, but
The more accounting people, I think, Don might want to see some of them. I don't know.
I just don't think this is for accounting people. I don't think that's the audience for this. I think the audience on this.
Yeah,
I think the accounting
true. People
are watching CFAC right now, and many of them are sitting on CFAC right now. I think if this is really to get the general public up to speed on understanding the budget,
that's a good point.
I agree with the point. You obviously don't want to. You don't want the purpose of your visuals to be to start to fudge the numbers. It's more. I just think it's digestible for people.
She has a point. I'm sorry, take some of it out and you make the print a little bigger so they can read it, or the charts or something. You know, maybe some of your employee business staff might have some thoughts.
I know it's a little subjective, but in this specific case, I would rather see the amounts with percentages in parentheses afterwards than look at a distorted graphic. If you look at the graphic here, it looks like the police budget is the same size as the fire department budget. And nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, there's a whopping difference between those two. And it has to do with the distortion of spreading out the graphic. So, I mean, the pictures should be helpful. And when they are, I'm all about that. But in this particular case, I don't really feel that they add very much to it. And if you had the percentages in parentheses alongside the flat numbers, I think you'd get an equally good idea of what we're talking about here. A good depiction of it. But clearly it's the distortion in the graphics just kind of spoils the effect of them.
Well, I think that's because we're trying to do a 3D on that pie chart, like Don said, do the bar, and that'll make it a little more obvious.
Yeah.
The bar chart would be your list if you got away from the that pie chart.
Okay.
I just noticed one thing, Jennifer, on expenditures by category. Other sources, I think that should be other uses, because it's the expenditures.
That's correct.
And I want to echo Walter's comment about the percentages. I think for that particular table, the percentages next to those figures would be more effective than that bar chart, because you really can't read the bar chart. But people should understand that the vast majority of general fund expenditures is for people, salaries and benefits.
Okay. I guess we could just add kind of how the cash balance reserves, there's the two columns, so we'll just add another column that says percentage of budget or something like that.
I like how John said that. I don't know how that fits on here as some kind of tagline, but for the public to know, the majority of the budget is about people. I don't necessarily think that right away when I look at salaries and benefits, although how could it be anything but people? But that's not where my mind goes directly, But when I hear it called out that way, it's like, oh yeah, we are really a people-driven, people and service-driven organization.
If there's any specific...
Even in the blue,
tagline that we could add down here, I think that... Have to think about
how
the wording.
John, I don't know. Say it again, John. I don't know what you said. Most of our money's on people.
We'll listen to the feedback, the tape.
Well, it relates real closely to that fiscal emergency plan. That's why we keep have always said on Measure Q, 73, it's varied over the years, 71% 1 year, 74% the next, but it's always a high percentage. And that's what people, you know, the easy thing to say, oh, just cut your expenses. Well, what, less paper? You know, it's all labor, a lot of it, obviously.
And something to keep in mind about this document is it's highly summarized. And so you're not going to get the whole picture. Like, for example, Walter, you mentioned the difference between police and fire. But actually, quite a substantial amount of the fire expenditures don't come from the general fund. Comes from Measure Q, comes from donations.
Donations.
So actually, when you look at the annual report, you see that police and fire are almost the same. But the funding sources are, and so when you're looking at just the general fund, of course, you have to look at just the funding from the general fund, and that's why there's such a difference there. But you can't possibly explain something like that in a summarized document like this. So you just have to reconcile yourself to the fact that there's going to be those unspoken realities. Mm-hmm.
But like Don said, get that enterprise funds. That's where I think we need a lot of education for the folks, because they are managed differently, they're run differently. The, you know, expenses can only be used for specific things versus a general fund. So you want people to think, because I hear council members and staff at a lot of reports using the word enterprise fund. So we want to make sure they know what that is.
You could add on the bottom, you know, for more budget specifics, go to, I know you have the website and whatnot there, but to John's point about, you know, this is high level and it's meant to be high level, but if you, you know, for specific questions.
I can, in future years, foresee as we get these refined, doing a different, whether it's a brochure or some other format, specific to Measure Q, so that you could have more detail in there. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not going to, you can summarize it, but you'll be able to provide more information just specific to that, and then specific to the enterprise funds. Tourism would probably be another one, and maybe a just capital project, or one in general that gave details on some of the capital projects going on.
Well, especially if you ever have to go out to the public and get any kind of special tax measure or TOT or anything, boy, you'd want to have that ready.
Where does the donations for the fire department come in? Is that other revenue funds?
The fire ones, I think, are under, yeah, other funds. And that's primarily the Bertha Schultz donation account.
Okay.
That is one definite, I don't know that it goes on this one, but one definition might be around utility discount, because that's been a hot button issue. You don't want to get into, you know, defining every single place that you get money, but I know the public is very interested in the utility discount program at the moment.
Okay.
Well, it's listed there, so that's a start.
Yeah.
It is on the citywide data, yeah, under the cash balance, mm-hmm, reserves, so it would, a definition of that would be okay. I can take the feedback back. I can go back with your feedback and do a kind of another final touch up and bring it back in. I guess that will be October.
Right, and please include your employees or staff or anybody. These are just suggestions from us off the top. I'm sure if you asked another group, you might get 10 different answers, but
I think we have it more refined now that,
yeah,
if we get it, put it out,
that would help
to some of the employees, we can get some good feedback.
Okay, good discussion. Thank you all. That brings us to item B5, future agenda items. Jennifer, I wanted to ask you about the Measure Q review. We always seem to leave that, and I know we have to because of some of the tax revenue, but we always seem to leave that to the, you know, December, the busiest time of the year, and with, I'm thinking with new council coming in and previous council approving budget and everything, it would be nice to have that closed out maybe in November instead of the usual January, February by the time we present it.
So I was going to recommend November. With the auditors coming mid-October, can't think of the November date, but we'd have better refined numbers for year-end.
Okay.
I don't want to preempt that necessarily and give you numbers, and I'll have to come back and change too much. But mm-hmm. we will have all the year-end entries done at that point. And mm-hmm. Sandy and the staff are doing a really good job, and actually feel like we're on schedule and ready to go this year. So hopefully we'll be able to. Our goal will be November for that for the year end.
That's good, because several of us have been involved with it now. And it's not, we're talking what, $1 million. It's not like the huge all the enterprise funds. It seems like we ought to be able to maybe check that one off the box a little earlier and report on that this year by year end. That would be my goal. So, okay, what else do you have or does anybody else have anything for future agenda items? I'm sure we're going to have a budget review pretty soon. So
for October, I'll have the mitigation measures for the fiscal response plan or emergency response plan. We'll bring back a final edited budget brochure. The first quarter update will happen in November, along with your year-end update.
Okay.
So you can expect that in November. I think I only have those two items. You'll also get first quarter investment report in November.
First quarter budget and investment report. Okay. So John's asking, is there a need for an October meeting?
Probably the most pressing need would, if you want input on the mitigation measures for the economic.
Yeah, I think just these two. Otherwise, it gets, especially with seven of us here, too long on the November. And there's some important stuff on the November. So, if you can't make it, don't worry. I don't think you've missed any meetings yet.
Okay.
And I do have one other suggestion. You can just put this in the back of your file. On the attendance, for all these board meetings, and I noticed, I don't know how we didn't catch this, but when we revised the policy, we said not having three absences in a 12-month period. But the problem is that's a rolling 12-month period. So I haven't been personally tracking that. I could go back and check it all, but I don't know who's tracking that. I noticed there were a couple, requests. But here's my concern. Then that changes all the time. So the next time you update that, and I didn't even want to ask with everything else going on that somebody consider that, but I would certainly change that language to in any fiscal year period or calendar year period. All of our terms are different. We start different times. We end. And I just think that's an administrative nightmare. I think the people tracking it are the individuals that sent the letter to council saying, can I be absent, and get excused. So I don't want any more work on your staff. And I think an easy way to do that would just somebody, you have to have a metric, but do we have to start that rolling 12-month average every month?
I believe the department overseeing the committee is responsible for tracking that. So I think we're supposed to track that internally and submit if there needs to be a request for an absence.
But
I get your point about being rolling and understanding who's had one in their 12-month period.
Right. So
we can take that.
Yeah, anyways, if we could ever get that policy changed to make it easier for all of us to track it, I was hoping I wasn't supposed to be the attendance monitor. But somebody has to do, it's a dirty job, but somebody has to do, I guess. So anyways, any other comments? So with that happy note,
I have one
go
more
ahead.
Comment. I didn't announce it at the beginning, but because I was hoping someone else would besides me, because I don't want to self-promo, but the candidate forum on the 24th, I think, is important for the public.
Oh, okay. Good point. Yeah, I should have.
Can I just say it?
Yeah, I think you
okay,
can.
Okay, so the City Council Candidate Forum on September 24th is from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Community Center. And the general public is invited to come and ask questions. And it's sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce and then facilitated by the League of Women Voters.
Okay, Thank you, Dawn. Yeah, we have had that before, people speaking at public comment, and as I recall, the city decided that as long as it's not electioneering but just a common point of information, that that is certainly appropriate and appreciated. So that's Monday the 24th. Thank you, Dawn. All right.
Six to 8 p.m., and it's at the community center. And the public is invited. You can submit questions right there in the audience. And then the way League of Women Voters facilitates is they collect and organize the questions, you know, so they're not repeat questions. And I believe each candidate gets a 2-minute intro, a 1-minute closing, and then direct responses to those questions.
Okay, thank you, Dawn. And I also understand that will be televised on Channel 20, so.
I believe so, yes.
Okay, great. Okay, so then that brings us, actually, we decide we do need an October meeting. That will be Tuesday, October 16th, 2018, and I'll adjourn this meeting at 5 o'clock p.m. Thank you all. Thank you all.
Probably about 2 minutes.